It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you're like me, you were probably glued to your TV screen watching the Steelers make their playoff push yesterday afternoon. It's what we sports fans do in Pittsburgh. But my next guest no longer watches NFL football. Keenan McMahon was married to former Steelers offensive lineman Justin Strelzik. Strelzik was killed in a fiery automobile crash in 2004 at age 36. Prior to that, he had exhibited bizarre and dangerous behavior that led to Keenan's decision to seek a divorce. Years later, a forensic pathologist, Dr. Bennett Amalu, studied Strelzik's brain and concluded that the 9-year NFL veteran suffered from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, a degenerative brain disease resulting from repeated blows to the head. The new movie Concussion contains scenes depicting the deterioration of former Steeler Justin Strelzik and the impact it had on Keena McMahon. She joins me now in studio. Keena, thanks for being here. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What has it been like for you since the work of Dr. Bennett Amalu resulted in this discovery of the thing called CTE, now that you have some explanation of what happened to Justin?
He's given me something that nobody could, and that was peace, really, because I was going through life. He didn't get Justin's brain slides until 3 years after he died. So for those 3 years, you know, the questions in your mind was, is it a mental illness? Was it alcoholism? And those are kinds of diseases that can be passed on genetically. And having children with him, that worried me. Like, is this something I'm going to have to worry about with my children someday? That fear as a parent. So a lot of peace of mind when he made that discovery, because I knew then I didn't have to worry about it being a genetic problem later on for our kids. So really, it's been something that, you know, was incredibly, you know, meaningful to me for him to make that discovery as a parent.
When Justin was playing for the Steelers, were there any indications of the effects that the pounding he was taking playing NFL football were having an adverse effect on him, not only physically, but perhaps mentally as well?
He came from a background where he had an alcoholic father. His brother was a heroin addict. So some of it, at times, I thought was maybe just, again, genetic. But looking back after the discovery, I can now see different times of the year or later on in his career, things got relatively worse at home. I thought maybe he had bipolar, the outbursts, anger outbursts. I just remember what he wanted our son to play, Pop Warner, you know, football. And our son didn't want to play and he was in first grade. And Justin, at the time we were separated, he came to pick him up. And I said, you know, he doesn't want to go. This is not something he wants to do. And, you know, he got very angry and he threw the pads and the helmet across the kitchen and he walked out the door and slammed the door. And those kinds of outbursts got progressively worse near the end of his career. I could see it. I could see now looking back, things were worse in the end than in the beginning. So I attribute that more to the constant head injury that he had.
What about physically? What were the things that Justin Strelzik went through that, and as an NFL player, that the average fan wouldn't have seen?
It's during the season. It is. It's very hard to watch because they, you know, and he was relatively young. I mean, he was 25 when I met him, but you know, he would walk down the stairs in the morning and he would walk down sideways one stair at a time and his knees were hurting. And there was a lot of laying around the day after a game. It was the kind of their rest day. And they had off on Tuesdays and Tuesdays there was a lot of just laying around. He couldn't walk up and down stairs. He tried to walk up and down stairs as little as possible because of his knees. You know, you see the bruises. One time he got turf burn on his elbow and it got infected. And I will never forget this. I was 8 months pregnant and I met him after the game and he looked at me and he said, you got to get me to a hospital now. This was after a Sunday game. And I said, why? We have family here. And he goes, I have 104 degree temperature. And I go, and you're playing? And he said, when did you know this? He said, last night, the trainer came up to my room and took my temperature and they think I have a staph infection. I said, why didn't you tell me last night? He goes, because I knew you'd be mad. Well, yeah, I was going to be mad. They put you on the field with a 104-degree temperature, and then after a game, they didn't even take you in an ambulance to the hospital. I took you. Like, so it's just, it's one of those things, like, you want to play, you want your job, you're playing. With a staph infection and a 104-degree temperature, you're playing. Hurt knees, you're playing. Flu, you're playing. Throwing up, you're playing. And that's just how it was.
Were you ever tempted to say to him, why do this? Is it really worth the toll this is taking on you to continue playing football?
No, because, well, first of all, you try to be a supportive wife, and I always looked at football as a business, and it's not my business. My family is my business. And, you know, for many years he was a wonderful dad. He, you know, was a great provider, and he was doing what he loved. And you don't take away you don't smash somebody's dreams. That was his dream. So, you know, he thought, you know, I'll get 10, 12 years in, and I'll be done and retire. And, you know, you think I'm going to make all of this money in 10 years, and then I'll just be done, and we'll worry about the knee thing later, and we'll worry about the, you know, hand injuries later. You never think brain injury. You know, the thing we worried most about was neck, being paralyzed. You know, that's what us wives sat in the stands worrying about, was neck injuries and having to deal with somebody who was 300 pounds being paralyzed. So we never thought about the head trauma.
So this was worth it to him as far as he was concerned, and when you, you know, thought about it or maybe tried to understand it, clearly he was one of those guys that if he had it to do all over again, he probably would have done it the same way.
Probably. I mean, I don't think that he would want our son to play. I don't think that. I think if he was sitting here today, he would say, I did it, but don't let your kids do it because look what it's done to me.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Keena McMahon, who was married to former Steelers offensive lineman Justin Strelzik. He died in 2004 from the effects of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. His story is one of those portrayed in the movie Concussion. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Whether you've seen the movie Concussion or not, perhaps some things that are coming up in this conversation might be of interest to you, and Keena will be happy to try and answer your questions. You talked about the changes that you noticed in Justin's behavior toward the end of his career. You talked a little bit about what he did, some violent outbursts. At the time, what did you think was causing it? Did you mentioned that there were some bipolar?
Well, I thought it was bipolar. A few days before he died, actually, he burst into our pediatrician's office, and he was demanding to see our children's medical records. I don't know why. I think I had one of them on antibiotics, and he was yelling at the pediatrician that drugs were bad, medicine was bad, to the point where when he left, they locked the door and called me because they thought he might come back with a gun, that he was so angry with the doctor's office for no reason. The next day, I red flagged their folders at school because I didn't want him to take them, and the next day he died. So I could see definitely that the couple weeks leading up to his death were very, very bad. A lot of stories, a lot of different strange things that he had said or did, and that was, you know, that was just one of them.
And he ended up dying at 36 in an automobile accident in New York. He hit a tank truck while driving 90 miles per hour against the flow of traffic to evade capture by the police. And I was going to ask you what you knew about what led up to that.
I spoke to him the night before about 7 o'clock in the evening. Even though we were divorced, we still spoke a few times a week. I forget why he called me the night before, and we were talking, and he was supposed to see the kids that weekend. And the next morning, the next afternoon around noon, I got a phone call from his best friend that his car had been in an accident. And they didn't know if it was him or not because he had no wallet on him, no ID. He left his wallet and cell phone at home. So they weren't sure if somebody had stolen his truck and taken it or it was him. So there was that kind of few hours before we could get his uncle over there to identify, because he didn't have a seatbelt on. He was ejected from the car. from the truck. So we had to wait for a family member to go to identify the body to see if it was him.
Did he ever seek help? Did you ever tell him?
You know, I tried the week before, about five days before he died. I called a very good friend of ours who was a doctor at Mercy Hospital and said, you know, you have to go see him. Something's really wrong. And he called him and had Justin meet him at the Mercy Hospital chapel. And they sat down and they had a talk. And Jim called me after and said, you know, I tried to get him to go over to the hospital to see a friend of mine who's a psychiatrist, but he was on to me. I said, let's go meet him for coffee. I want you to meet a friend. And he said, he knew what I was trying to get him to do, and that was go see a doctor. And he said he wouldn't come with me. He said, so I left him at the chapel. He said he wanted to pray. He said, I'm going to go back and check on him Saturday. And that was on Tuesday, and on Thursday he had died. So, and a couple days before he was, you know, kind of, I feel like almost saying goodbye to people. Like he knew something was going to happen to himself, but he didn't know what. He left a lot of writings, a lot of just scribblings and short stories and paragraphs that I had given to the director of the movie and the man who played him in the movie, Matt Willig, to go over. That was a lot of the research. I gave them his motorcycle for the movie, his helmet, all of his game balls. Everything in the movie was his. So they really... you know, came into our life and really studied his past for that role.
What do you remember? I want to go back in mm-hmm. time and get to know the Justin before all this happened, the man that you fell in love with. What was he like? How did you meet? And what were those early days like?
We met at a bar, but really we had he played football at Maine with a man who was marrying a very good friend of mine. And we were both supposed to be in the wedding. And he was away in Buffalo. And they said, when he comes back for the season, we're going to go on a double date. You know, all four of us will go out. You guys would get along so great. You two are a lot alike. And they ended up eloping, so they never had a wedding. But one night I was out, and I recognized him from the pictures they had shown me. And I went over and introduced myself and said, you know, I'm John and Elise's friend. Kina, we were going to be in their wedding together, and he was actually on a date with somebody, and we spoke for a few minutes. He took my number, and he called me the next day, and we got married 3 months later.
and you had a real wedding.
Yeah, we had a real wedding. My kid didn't come for 2 years later, so.
but as far as the personality.
It's such a cliche, but happy-go-lucky. I mean, he was a lot of fun to be. I mean, anybody else, he's just a lot of fun to be around. Didn't take life too seriously, but serious enough that, you know, he was a responsible adult. You know, always up for an adventure. You know, whether it was a road trip or going skiing or, you know, hiking with the dogs. We had a couple dogs when we were first married, and you know, just like to hang out with friends and have barbecues and just, you know, normal, just every day, just a lot of fun. A lot of. Just a very relaxed personality.
And as far as you're concerned, it was football that changed him?
I mean, you know, in the beginning, wasn't sure what it was. But, you know, in the end, after Dr. Amala's discovery, I realized and that it was football that changed him, because I get emails and messages now from former players and their wives. And it's heartbreaking because they'll say to me, a lady messaged me the other day, I need to talk to you. You need to hear about the things I'm going through, but text me before you call me because I need to make sure he's out of the room. I need your help. Like, and this isn't the first, you know, former player's wife that's come to me in the past year with problems that they want to talk about. And I, you know, it's sad because I don't know what to say to them, because I feel like there's no hope. I don't know what to say to them. You know, I can't pay my bills. He's an addict. He's, you know, they're going through the same issues that I had. So, you know, had it just been Justin, I would have questioned, is it mental illness or is it football? But when I have messages coming in and we have 93 former players that are diagnosed with this, I know it's football. It's not something else. You know, this is what it is, because there's too many people that are suffering from it. It's not just one.
What should the NFL do, in your opinion?
What would I like them to do, or what should they do?
Well,
you know,
both, I guess.
I would love for them to just man up and admit that this is, you know, what it is. The lawsuit is being, you know, settled out of court because, you know, they don't want to admit that there was wrongdoing that they knew. And I just really want them to take care of. We're going to see a lot more of these issues with the players that were the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s. And I know they're making changes now, but that's not going to help the past 35, 40 years of football and the players that are coming up that we're going to see with CTE, dementia, depression. And, you know, changing the game is a hard thing to do. I would love to see the linemen stand, because what people need to understand is it's not one concussion. Justin never had a concussion. He was never diagnosed with a concussion.
That's what Dr. Amalu said.
It is the repetitive day in, day out. And these linemen are down low, and you have 300-pound guys coming up and hitting with such force. Why not have them stand all the time? Let's not do this. Let's not do the head-to-head. Let's stand. Let's try to get rid of that repetitive head trauma. And what worries me, I really want to see parents educated, because I'm afraid parents are going to think, oh, little Johnny had a concussion, he's going to get CTE and die. No, that's not the case. Which one concussion doesn't make for CTE, but no concussions do make for CTE. And parents really need to, and the NFL needs to set an example in their education of this disease and the problems that football brings to having this disease. Because it's a trickle-down effect. It starts with the big guy. It's the NFL. Then the college pays attention. Then the high schools. Then the little guys. So they need to set an example with education and taking care of their players and really being honest in that, listen, there's no way to stop CTE. And you saw the movie. Our brain is not tethered to anything. It floats around in there, in water. There's never going to be a helmet that fixes this. We need to monitor, and we need to educate. And those are the things that the NFL needs to set an example in doing and really do it right for the littlest kids that are out there today to have the right education and care. I want little kids to be able to say, hey, even at 8 years old, don't put me back in. Something's not okay, coach. Mm-hmm. Something's not okay. I want 8-year-olds to understand that, you know?
Rather than being told that, you know, be tough.
Go in. Because what do you hear coaches out there say? Hit harder, hit harder. That needs to stop.
What is important for fans to know? The people that, because as you know, what happened to Justin was a tragedy. What happened to Mike Webster was a tragedy. And so many other people that are, you see their stories in the movie, Dave Duerson. Mm-hmm. Monumentally tragic stuff, but people move on. They continue to watch the game. Everybody's excited about the playoffs, and you know, it's hard for them, I think.
Well, fans don't love the players. They love the game. There's a difference. Players are disposable. New one comes in. We forget about the old one. And I don't think you're going to change that fan mentality. It's the game they love. It's not the people playing it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Keena McMahon, who was married to former Steelers offensive lineman Justin Strelzik. You say you don't watch the NFL anymore, don't watch football.
No.
Certainly, I think people can understand that.
Yeah.
You have seen the movie, mm-hmm. Concussion, and of course, Justin's story is told in that movie. What did you think of it?
I thought, you know, I did. There were things that were shot that were taken out of the movie that I thought, you know, could have been left in. My daughter was on set. She's actually one of the bar patrons in the movie. And Will Smith was, when you see the bar crowd cheering, Will Smith was actually shot in that scene. They had him in Peter's Pub in Oakland watching the football game and kind of like watching the people around him like, huh. This is what it's all about. They took that out for time reasons. You know, things got edited because you can't fit 4 hours into 2 hours. So, and that's okay. I mean, I thought the movie, the subject was Bennett, and it got the job done. This movie isn't about NFL. It's not about football. It's not about Justin. It's not about Mike. It's about Dr. Amalu. So I think that it did its job in people knowing about Bennett Amalu and his discoveries and, you know, kind of the trials and tribulations that Dr. Amalu went through to get this out there. And I think that was important because a lot of people are making this movie about football, 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 NFL. It's about Dr. Amalu's life. You know, when I look at it, that's what I see. And, you know, I think, I mean, I... It,
but doesn't it also tell... the story of what mm-hmm. people like you went through, being married mm-hmm. to an NFL player who was going through
somebody all this. Said, you know, there's not enough of your story or Mike's story. I said, those are other movies that would take 10-hour miniseries to tell. You know, you can't fit all these guys. There's too many men in that.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Mike in Pittsburgh, who joins us. Hi, Mike. You're on with Keenan McMahon. Hello, Mike.
Thanks for doing this, Tina. Thank you. I'd also like to include the men that never get to the NFL, who maybe get a scholarship to college and play, but they end up with this, because I have a friend who played in the 70s, and it affected him. He's dead now. You know, at the age of 58, he died suddenly, but his life was a wreck, and his poor wife didn't know what was going on. His family, his brothers and sisters, wouldn't help her. They just thought, he's having a midlife crisis. He's tired of you. But what I'm wondering is there a way for not just NFL families and wives in particular to get some support to help cope with, you know, in the aftermath, but also my friend's a widow really wants to help others too.
So you're bringing up a question of whether there is a support group available for NFL wives and maybe the wives and family members of men.
Well, even more so for families, the men who never got to the NFL.
Okay.
CTE isn't just an NFL disease; it's a football disease.
Well,
it's not just football.
It's also soccer.
Sure.
There's former Army veterans with CTE. There's downhill skiers. Steve, your question is, I have just paired up with a woman named Karen Moyer. Her husband played Major League Baseball, Jamie Moyer, for many years.
Right.
Karen and I and we are a part of something called Sisters in Sports. And we just branched off to start a foundation that will help raise money for these women that come to me or come to us and say, I can't pay my bills. I don't know where to turn. Do you have a number I can call? Is there a psychiatrist I can see? So we're starting this. This is a relatively new thing. So a lot of us, Jeremy Roenick's wife, we have a lot of former professional athletes and we welcome all, we say sisters in sports, whether it's college, coaches' wives, former wives, ex-wives, sisters, mothers, aunts. If you have someone that played in college or NFL, she's welcome to Google Sisters in Sports. And no fee to come in and join us and sign up for the emails and get information. And again, that goes back to, we talk about people that didn't make it to the NFL. It goes back to my point. The NFL needs to set an example so that colleges, because there are a lot of players that don't make it to the NFL that have this problem. The NCAA is probably going to have to start to think about, what do we have for these men that you know, spill their blood and body parts for us? We need to help them in the after. You know, when they're done playing is the worst days. And that's something that I think we're going to eventually see happen, but we're not there now, you know.
Before we wrap up, a lot of people have seen concussion. A lot of people haven't, but probably are planning to. I saw it just Saturday night. And one of the questions that occurred to me, knowing that I would be talking to you today, was what was it like? Because the movie reenacts scenes from your mm-hmm. marriage when Justin was struggling and he was violent.
Mm-hmm.
How hard was it for you to relive those episodes on screen?
Well, let me say this. He did not choke me.
That was just a movie thing?
That was a movie. People don't understand. This is not a documentary. It is a movie. So what the director was doing, and we only had, I think, 4 men portrayed in concussion, but really he's trying to work in 93 different personalities from CTE victims into these. But it was, I mean, me telling him to get out and hitting him out the door was very accurate. The fighting, I mean, it's been 11 years. I've come to terms with the past, so I was okay.
And what do you hope results from all the attention the movie's bringing to this issue? Probably what you were talking about
education
earlier.
For parents. I want parents to really wake up and listen and just be educated, and for the players, former players and wives, to get the help they need.
My guest has been Keenan McMahon, who was married to former Steelers offensive lineman Justin Strelzik. He died in 2004 from the effects of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. His story is one of those portrayed in the movie Concussion. Keenan McMahon, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you. It's nice to meet you. Thank you.
Coming up, the story of a Coriopolis company that's developed a web-based brain performance monitoring system for patients who have had concussions. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.